You're listening to the Packernet Podcast Network.
What's up, guys and gals? Welcome into Packers Total Access. I'm your host, Clayton Bailey. You can check us out on Packernet.com. You can find me on Twitter at Packers_Access. If you'd like to email the show, you can do that by sending a message to PackersTotalAccess@gmail.com. And we've got on the line with us today our good buddy from Packernet Podcast, Mr. Jacob. Jacob, what's going on, buddy? How you doing on this Sunday afternoon?
Man, I'm doing great. It's been a lot of busy stuff happened in the last few days, working in Packers football, so can't complain.
Absolutely, man. It's finally here, right? Everything's here, and I don't know, man. I'm excited about football season. Just watching the game the other night, and not necessarily in a in a detailed manner. Just hanging out with Ryan. Those preseason games, dude. It's fun to watch those and do a stream. But when that regular season kicks off, Jacob, it's going to be so stressful, man. I can't do it on screen like that. Just can't.
I was going to say, I won't be able to do that. I'll be cussing and pacing and sweating too much.
Absolutely. All right. So here's what we got in line for today, guys. We got our very first Chalk Talk episode. You know, we've been explaining how we're going to do a different format in season for Packers Total Access. So today's going to be our first Chalk Talk episode. There may be later on in the season where we do multiple plays on a Chalk Talk episode, but today we're just going to key in on one specific play, and that's a Romeo Doubs 33-yard touchdown catch there in the first quarter of the preseason game against the Niners. And then we're also going to look back on the five players that I told you guys on a past pod that I was looking to really pay attention to, in the first preseason game. And we're going to talk about their PFF grades real quick and kind of give you an idea of how well they played. Maybe, you know, honestly, it looks like one of them played extremely well, one of the five that I listed. Two played kind of at par, what I would expect a rookie to do, and then two underperformed a little bit. So we're going to kind of touch on that so you get a little bit better understanding of how those players performed as well. And then we're also going to answer a listener email, and it's a really cool one. I think you guys will appreciate it being hardcore Packer fans. So let's do this. Let's jump into the first segment. And again, this is a work in progress. The goal here, guys, isn't to sound smart. One of my biggest pet peeves are when – quote unquote coaches or tape heads, they try to make the terminology more difficult than it actually is when they're communicating specifics on a play. Right. And I don't want this to turn into that. Okay. What I want you guys to come away from this pod with is a little bit better understanding of exactly what happened in the game, and more specifically, one of the big plays. Okay. That's the whole purpose of this. So please don't take me using different terminology as trying to sound cool or smart. The goal is to help educate other people. And then in turn, you know, I'm going to learn a ton of stuff along the way as well. And if you guys have information that I might not understand, shoot me an email and we'll add it to the show, communicate it, and we'll all learn together. That's the goal. Okay. So the play that we're going to break down, the one that stood out, and Jacob, I know we went nuts on this. We were a little bit off tilt when it came to everybody's stream. It seems like all three of us that first half, we weren't synced up at all. So you guys seen me throwing a football across the room and getting fired up. And you guys were in a timeout or something, right? So it got a little bit wild there. But the play that we're going to break down was in the first quarter. There was 5 minutes and 50 seconds left. It was a 4th-and-3, okay? And, Jacob, first of all, I want to get your take on this play before we break it down. You've seen the Romeo Doubs touchdown, right?
Yep.
Yeah, okay, cool. So what was your take on it, just watching it as a fan as we were sitting there watching it? How did you feel, you know, Romeo did on that play? What stood out to you? Is there anything that you were like, man, that was, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we were talking earlier about how right away Love comes up and sees DeGora set on the left side. Probably that would have been the seat to go to, but he did see that the cornerback was on the inside technique, which if you want to just real quick explain what the inside technique means for – people that maybe not know that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's different coaches use different terminology. Sometimes people would just say inside man, Some people, I like to say technique because it tells people, oh, okay, that's a technique the defender's using. So inside technique. And then others will say shade. But shade's a terminology that's used a lot on the defensive line. Everything kind of becomes convoluted. My goal is to create our own form of language on here for listeners to understand a little bit better. But when you say inside technique, imagine a defender lining up with a receiver or a running back or a tight end from across the line of scrimmage, and they're in man coverage. Okay, so if you've got in this case, Dobbs, let's just jump right into it. He's in the slot, right? He's lined up just off the right side of the offensive line. He's probably looks like maybe 5 yards, maybe 4 yards away from the right tackle. He's lined up there. The DB is basically he's lined up on Dobbs's left shoulder. So he's centered on Dobbs's left shoulder, which is showing he's showing inside shade, inside technique, meaning he's looking to take away a slant, a drag, anything like that. And typically when a DB does that, it means there's a blitz coming because the goal is get to the quarterback before they can get the ball out. So you want to take away those underneath routes. You want to take away those easy outlets. And let's just jump right into the dissecting of this play, okay? Like I said, it's 4th and 3. This is what I call gun, empty 11, strong left, okay? Gun obviously means they're in the shotgun. Empty means there's nobody in the backfield. 11 is the personnel, which is one running back, one tight end, meaning 3 wide receivers. Where you're going, okay, so they've got 11 personnel. They got a running back out there, but it's an empty backfield? Absolutely. So they've got the running back flex all the way out to the right side of the formation. Okay, so they're in a 5-wide set basically, and it's empty. It's gun, empty 11, strong left. The strong left is communicating that the tight end, wherever, if we said strong right, that means the tight end would have been on the right side of the ball of the offensive line. But seeing that he's strong left and he is flexed, he's attached to the line. He's flexed just a bit. That strong left is telling us the tight end is on the left side of the formation. So essentially it turns into a trips formation. Again, don't want to go down the rabbit hole of trying to explain every little nuance. We just want to explain this play and trying to do it on a podcast with a number system. Now,
did they motion out the running back? Did he start in the backfield and did they motion him out? Or did they actually start with him flexed out?
If I remember correctly, and I'm watching the all 22 that's already cut, so they're already set, I'm pretty sure they broke the huddle and went to that 5-wide set. Okay. Now, if you do pre-snap motion, you still got the same end result. But that's a great question, by the way, Jacob. You still got the end result, but there'll be motion added into the terminology, and that tells the running back, you know, motion right, whatever. So in this scenario, though, when it comes to calling out the play and understanding the route combinations, this is why I said on past podcasts, guys, that every offense, that people make it sound like the difference between a West Coast offense and a power run offense or whatever, they're so different. The only thing that's different is the terminology, right? That's all it is. That everybody's running the same route combinations. Everybody runs the same route tree. If you don't know what the route tree is, there's 9 routes on a tree on the wide receiver route tree. Okay. Basically, a 9 route is a fly that's straight down the field, right? It's a go route. A 7 is a corner. So it's 10 to 15 yards, and then you're breaking out toward the sideline. An 8 is a post, so it's opposite of the corner. You've got a 5, which is a deep out. You've got a 6, which is a deep dig or in, right, an in route. You've got a 3, which is a hitch, which is, you know, anywhere from 5 to 10 yards, and then curl out towards the sideline. Then you've got the actual curl route is in. So the difference between a hitch is you break out and back to the ball, and the curl is you break in and back to the ball. Okay, that's the 4 route. And then the 1 route is a quick out towards the sideline. The 2 route is the slant, you know, the 2 to 3 yards, and then breaking inside diagonally, you know, those quick hitters. So with that being said, this play, gun empty 11, strong left, 49-29-4. I use the old archaic East Coast terminology because it's an easier way to communicate the same information, and every team has different terminology they use, okay? So 49-29-4, from left to right, you've got Juwan Winfrey all the way over. He is the X receiver. The X is always going to be the receiver for the most part that's lined up the farthest from the ball, okay? So he's the X receiver. Next to him, you've got Amari Rodgers, who is the he's right here in the slot. Then you've got Josiah DeGuara, who's your tight end. And then on the right side of the ball, you've got Romeo Dobbs, and then you've got Patrick Taylor, the halfback, okay? So 49-29-4. Juwan Winfrey, that's a 4 route. It's going to be just a little sit, like a little curl inside. Amari Rodgers is going to be on route. Now, it's a go route, but it's got a fade aspect to it. So we call that a non-fade route. Okay, there's no fade on the route tree. That's just kind of the technique he's going to use in that go route. Up next is Josiah DeGuara, which I put a two down because he breaks the route off and turns it into kind of like this skinny seam route with almost like a little slant to it. And you'll understand why in a minute when I explain exactly what happens on the play. And then on the opposite side, you've got Dobbs with another nine route. That's going to be a fade. So a non-fade concept. So basically, and then on the opposite side, you've got Taylor at the very top of the screen. He's going to run a four route as well. So 4-2 or 4-9-2-9-4 is the route combination here. Okay. And all of them are designed to do something specific. When the ball is snapped, you'll notice that if you guys go back and watch it yourself, when the ball is snapped, you'll see kind of what the idea is here. You're looking to determine, okay, are they really in man coverage or are they in zone? So when the ball is snapped, these outside DBs are basically playing press. They're right up. Okay, that tells you right off the bat that's man coverage. You got one deep safety down the seam. Okay. Well, that deep safety down the seam looked like he was playing, you know, either a cover one or maybe they were disguising a cover three man press, right? But when the ball is snapped, DeGuara comes completely uncovered underneath. That was actually the route that Jordan Love should have gone to. So to go back and talk about the different terminology, we were talking to Coach Hahn in the chat. He referred to this play as 11 NASCAR, tray left empty, Haas Y option. Okay, 11 NASCAR, tray left empty, Haas Y option. That's a lot of terminology in different coaching staffs that may mean something a little bit different. That's why I wanted to use the number system. But what happened on this play? Let me explain it to you. So Jordan Love, obviously, throws a touchdown pass to Romeo Dobbs, 33 yards, right? And you see it in the casual fan will see that play and go, oh, man, that was great. Pitch and catch deep. You know, he really burned him deep. There's so much going on in this play, Jacob. And this is why we wanted to do a Chalk Talk segment. First of all, they're playing zero man coverage, but they're showing a one deep sugar. So that safety that's on the left side of the hash there.
Can you explain what a sugar is for those real quick?
Absolutely. Sugar is a terminology used by coaching staffs when you're trying to disguise a look. Okay, so let me go back to the early 2000s. It's a great question. I'm glad you asked that, Jacob. In the early 2000s, you guys remember when the New England Patriots would absolutely dominate Peyton Manning? You remember that, Jacob?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, this is what would happen. Peyton Manning is this computer at quarterback, right? Arguably the best ever to play the game from a mental standpoint, right? But he would come to the line of scrimmage, and they would have a base play called. And when he would come to the line of scrimmage, he would read the defense, and then he would change the play at the line of scrimmage. And he'd be calling out, you know, terminology. You guys remember Omaha, Omaha, right?
Omaha.
Now it's Omaha Productions. And, you know, it's funny. Most of the time he was sugaring himself, right? He was making them think he was changing the play, especially when they started to catch on. But anyway, what Bill Belichick would do, they studied his tape. And they said, you know what? He comes to the line, he reads the defense, and then it was like clockwork. I think it was the seven-second mark. There'd be 7 seconds left on the play clock, and then he would change the play, come set, maybe one fake snap, or you know, one hard count, and then they would snap the ball and go. Well, Bill Belichick, being the freaking genius that he is, he said, I want us to show a look that's opposite of what we're actually running. And you guys do not shift into the real defense until 7 seconds on the play clock. So he comes to the line. He goes, okay, this is what they're doing. Okay, they're in a two-man under. They may have two safeties up on the shelf. And then he go, okay, Omaha, Omaha. He changed the play. And then at the seven-second mark, he gets under center. He's ready to, you know, to start his hard count and snap the ball. Well, guess what would happen? That defense would shift around, and everything was totally different from what he saw. That's what you call sugaring. The defense was sugaring their look. And when I say sugaring, it's, you know, they're tricking you. They're, you know, blowing you a kiss there. Like, hey, you get as soon as the ball snapped, and it's not what you, another terminology, you know, term that's used is seeing ghosts, right? They'll say, I'm seeing ghosts out there. And you know, you can go back to the Brett Favre days, and Mike Holmgren would always tell him, don't see any ghosts out there, meaning forget what the defense is even doing, okay? If you go through your progressions in a West Coast offense, meaning here's your first read, here's your second read, here's your third read, every offensive play is designed for success. If you read every offensive play 100% correct, and it's easier said than done, there will be a receiver open because your keys, your side adjustments are, okay, you know, if the first progression in the read is a, you know, let's say the first progression in the read here in this specific play is the nine route, the fade route on the left side there from Amari Rodgers. Okay, yeah. When he snaps the ball, he looks there, he sees the safeties over the top. That's not going to be there. Let's go to read number two. Maybe read number two is DeGuara, and he's, you know, going down the seam uncovered. Bam, the number two would be there. Well, let's say they were playing press man on DeGuara, then he wasn't open. Then you would go to read number three, which might be Dobbs on the backside or on the front side rather. So anyway, that's what sugaring means there. So zero man, one deep sugar. The sugar in this case was they had the safety deep down the seam, which made you think he's just playing a deep zone, which when in fact what he was doing was covering man. He was in man coverage on DeGuara, but he was just playing way off. Now, how did they get away with that, Jacob? It's because they had two linebackers in the middle of the field here. So you don't know, are they going to drop into coverage or not? So as soon as the ball is snapped, the weak side linebacker immediately blitzes the A to B gap. And it looks to me like the strong side backer is actually in a spy delay blitz, okay? Meaning he's not going to attack as quick. The guy attacks the B gap on the right side of the line, and then you see that delay blitz. He wants all five of those offensive linemen to engage with the pass rushers, and then he's going to come free. Now, obviously, the protection was set up to where Jordan Love identified the weak side linebacker as the Mike, okay, which tells the right tackle you're going to block the end. The right guard is going to have to work in unison with the center to either block this two technique, or it might even be a three technique on the right side from the offense's perspective. They've got these three offensive line on the right side, the tackle, the guard, and the center, they're going to slide to the right and pick up that Mike linebacker that was identified, which was the weak side linebacker. What that tells you is this strong side linebacker is free. Nobody's blocking him. They're bringing six. We're only got five in the pass protection. So that's on Jordan Love. Jordan Love's job is to make sure that that sixth rusher does not hit home. So he's got to get the ball out quick, and he knows it. And that's the good thing. He read this play pre-snap. He read it beautifully. Post-snap, he made a little bit of a mistake, but it still ended up being a great play. Okay, so zero man, one deep sugar, leaving DeGuara on a free release. So the fact that they're sugaring with that safety deep, they were probably what Jordan Love is looking at here is, are they blitzing or not? If they are, then is DeGuara going to be open? Now, right before the snap, you've seen the safety start to creep up. He starts to show his hand. He backpedals, and bam, he attacks DeGuara. Okay? Jordan Love might have gave him a peek, but he sees something else on the right side with Dobbs.
I was going to say, it's almost like the release was so smooth and so quick that he didn't have to even look over toward DeGuara. You know what I mean? It was that footwork. And like we talked about, being that he has that inside technique, the cornerback, Dobbs could have tried to simply just release and just shoot upfield, but he hard faked real quick, stepped inside, and then did that, you know, move to get around him. And like we talked about, the separation, like after even just 5 yards, he's past him. After 10 yards, he's 2 feet past him. After 15 yards, you know what I'm saying? Like you go on and he was running away from the guy. And we talked about his game speed, and that is just really incredible to watch. And when you slow it down into slow motion, it is Devontae-esque, I will say.
I'm telling you, man, it's deceptive. The kid has what they call football speed. And some people, oh, God, here we go with football speed. We know what his 40 was. Okay, when you put those pads on and you put that adrenaline, heavy helmet on, there's some players that can't do it. And Dobbs has that. So here's what I want you to really notice. Let's focus on you know, inside the box. Okay, let's focus on the offensive line and the pass rush itself first. As we roll it here, Jacob, look at the pocket that's formed here, man. I mean, first of all, the communication between the center and the guard, because this guy right here, and I know you guys can't see this. I'm going to try to describe it. The defensive tackle on the right side of the line, everything I'm talking about is going to be from the perspective of the offense. So imagine you're in that Madden camera, right? You're playing Madden football, and you got the camera right behind the quarterback, okay? So you've got this defensive tackle on the right side. He's really going to stress and put strain on this right guard, and he wants this A to B gap blitz here by the weak side linebacker. Again, it's the weak side linebacker because it's strong left. The tight end is on the left side of the formation. So what he does, though, here, you can obviously tell that Jordan Love identified the linebacker as the mic, which tells the center he's responsible for the linebacker, and the guard is responsible for the D tackle. Obviously, the right tackle is responsible for the defensive end. But look at that pocket, man. Bam. Everybody picks it up. Jordan Love is responsible for the free blitzing linebacker. They don't have another guy to help block. But look at Jordan Love's drop. This is what really stood out to me. Pre-snap read was there. Now, first of all, DeGuara is open. The proper read here, especially on a 4th-and-3, is take the easy conversion, right, and just dump it to DeGuara. But what Jordan Love does, as soon as he snaps the ball, he recognizes Dobbs. Now, let's go to Dobbs and focus on him for a second. Dobbs is, you know, the guy's playing press man on him, right? That's what we're seeing. It looks like, okay, if he's in a zone, he's really, really sugaring deep. He's all in on this acting job. The DB is shaded inside, what I call inside technique. He's playing Dobbs's left shoulder, which tells Dobbs and tells Love that he's playing inside technique. He's given an outside release, right? Well, it just so happens this play is designed where you've got Amari Rodgers on the left side of the formation running that 9 fade route, meaning it's a go route, but you're going to bend to the outside. Dobbs is doing the same thing up here. So now it comes to the release with inside shade. I was talking to Jacob about this offline. It would be so easy for a young receiver to go, oh, I'm toasting him outside, and just immediately go to the outside. If you do that, that DB might be able to run stride for stride with you. But what Dobbs does is so brilliant. He still gives an inside jab. He does a little stutter chop. He jams his left foot inside, and he forces the DB to commit inside because he knows that defensive coordinator, that the schematics of this specific play is you do not get beat inside. Why is that? Because the ball's got to come out quick because we're blitzing 6 and they've only got 5 in protection. So the goal is take any underneath routes away and force them to basically take a hit. So when the ball is snapped, the release is sick. Dobbs immediately separates. And what's beautiful about Jordan Love in this situation, guys, it was literally a 3-step drop. 1, 2, 3, foot hit, back foot hits the ground, hitches clean, and the ball comes out, and it is a beautiful ball. So Dobbs, great footwork on the outside release, great rhythm by Jordan Love, like I said, with the 3-step drop and a clean hitch. And then Dobbs, once again, Jacob, showing exactly what you said just a second ago. This guy's got game speed. Guys, it's literally not even 4 yards into the route, and Dobbs already has 2 yards of separation. Like, he's gone. The guy never recovers. Now, yes, yeah, the inside jab helped, but I'm telling you, this is what we're talking about with in-game speed when the pads go on. Now, let's go to Dobbs's scouting report, and this comes from NFL Draft Buzz, all right? 6'2", 204. He only ran a 4.5, 240, right? Not Blake. I mean, you talk about Christian Watson running a 4, you know, possibly a 4.2, definitely a 4.3, 40 at his size. You know, according to in shorts, basically running the 40 in underwear, Dobbs is one of the slower wide receivers on the field for the Green Bay Packers, right? 4.5, 240. But check this out. NFL Draft Buzz has his hands graded a 78%. Guys, that's showing up. We've seen the drops on the game Sunday. So his weakness is his hands, right? Especially, it's funny, he can make contested catches, but on that wide open crosser where Jordan Love was rolling left, Jacob, he couldn't catch it, right? It's amazing how that works. His short route running grade was 84%. His medium was 89%, and his deep was 89%. So this is a receiver that the strength of his game is medium to deep route running, and we're finding out that he has game speed. I mean, the separation there, as we watch it loop one more time here, Jacob, is, I mean, it's pretty impressive. And here's what's crazy. It happens here. It happened against Stokes, and you guys seen, as soon as he beat Stokes off the line, Stokes never recovered.
Never.
Dude, Stokes is one of the fastest corners in the league.
That was the play where he threw his helmet, right? Like, he was so mad.
Yeah. Exactly. Now, think about this. They were talking about how Jair locked him down the other day, right? Well, that route that he ran against Jair, he didn't catch the ball. But you remember in the tweet and everybody talking about it, he beat Jair off the line.
Yep.
Like, he won the route. He just didn't make the catch. So we've got something special. Guys, this is a rookie. Like, if he builds on this, and again, it all comes back to, is someone going to really, really master their craft, right? Are they going to master their craft? And that's going to be the question for Romeo Doubs. If he's this good as a rookie and he studies his craft like Davante Adams did while he was here, oh, my God. I mean, and here's the other thing, too. Give kudos to Jason Vrabel. This kid fell so far in the draft. What round did he fall to, Jacob?
Fourth.
So he falls all the way to the fourth round, right? So nobody's expecting him to contribute this year. And then he goes
What's funny, too, remember Eli Cummings did an interview with Ryan, and I believe that at one point he said that he had him tipping into the early second, maybe late first, and then eventually settled into the fourth. But he said that that was like one of the biggest steals of the draft, in his opinion, and I think we obviously see why.
Yeah, I completely agree, man. I mean, it's what's awesome is he falls to the fourth, and then Jason Vrabel takes him in to one OTA and then one mini camp. And his first training camp, you're seeing this. So, yes, Doubs is looking great. But let's give Jason Vrabel some freaking credit. I mean, my goodness. Yeah. Now, think about this, guys. And this is the stuff that I really get into. I probably think too far down the line sometimes, Jacob. But I'm already thinking, if we have the success that we've had in the past, right, then everybody's going to come a-knocking, and they're going to be poaching our coaches again. So if Stanovich gets offered a head coaching job, you've got Jason Vrabel in the background who's doing this kind of work with a rookie wide receiver. And I believe Jason Vrabel is actually the passing team coordinator too. He is getting trained up right now to be our next offensive coordinator if indeed Stanovich does go on. And
he's not related to Mike Vrabel, is he?
That's a great
son or something.
He may be related. I haven't looked into that. We need to do the research on that and tweet that out if he is, because that would be pretty cool. It's so rare you see the name Vrabel, right? Especially But anyways, guys, that's your Chalk Talk segment. We want to start doing that the first episode following the post-game show. Okay, so we do the post-game show on game day. As soon as the game's over, we'll give you a recap of the game. Then we want to do one Chalk Talk, and we want people to kind of understand at a little bit deeper level, why was this play successful? We may do as many as three, but I really feel like one should probably be the limit because, again, you guys can't see this visually, so it makes things difficult. I don't want it to be boring, but at the same time, I want you to come away understanding what happened on that play, why it was successful, who did what well, and who might not have done, you know, something as well. Like, there is a negative aspect to that play, Jacob. Jordan Love did not hit the hot read. He should have hit the hot read on a fourth and three, in my opinion. Now, at the same time, it's hard to argue with a 33-yard touchdown dagger, right? Because, again, he read inside technique. He knew that Doubs was going to be on an outside release there on a go fade. So, snap the ball. Bam, clean release. Let's take a shot. I kind of like that. But again,
I was going to say, you almost like that mentality because, you know, Brett Favre wouldn't have taken the fourth and three easy throw. I'd like to think probably Rodgers isn't even going to take that. You know, he likes to throw it up there. And I like that he had that confidence in himself and with the receiver that he said, okay, I'm not even going to look at my other, you know, read. I'm just going to throw this up there. I saw that he busted off the line. And you can't be mad at that. If anything, I think that shows that he's getting a little more confidence in himself and trusting his throws, trusting his reads.
Absolutely. And you mentioned Brett Favre. Brett Favre probably would have seen the hot and said, that's too easy. He would have seen Doubs and went, that's going to be open. Let me see if I can throw this through the defender's chest that's got Amari Rodgers completely locked up. That was Brett Favre, right? I kind of miss those days, man. He was excited. Oh, yeah. It was a lot of fun. All right, guys. So that's the Chalk Talk segment. Again, gun empty 11, strong left. 49-29-4, also known as an empty base flex, strong left. Coach Hahn's terminology, he refers to it as 11 NASCAR, Trey left empty, Haas Y option. Jordan Love to Romeo Doubs, 33-yard touchdown strike. Beautiful play, man. I'll tell you this, Jordan Love made some mistakes in that game. Some of, you know, there were several plays that weren't his fault, we would all agree. But there was some, like that ugly interception, Jacob, that he threw. You know, when Amari Rodgers, that's another great example. Remember when we were watching the game, I pointed out that was a horrible mistake. I'm over here rewinding it on my big screen while we're doing the live, you know, watch party. And the reason I say it was a horrible mistake by Jordan Love is because in the same situation here, very similar to this play we just outlined, guys, when he came to the line of scrimmage, the defender that was lined up on Amari was playing mirror match press man, and he had inside leverage, inside technique. He was playing his inside shoulder. Jordan Love should immediately seen that and said, okay, that slant is not there, period. Move on to another read. But instead, he snaps the ball, doesn't look at anybody else, tries to hammer it in, and it was completely covered up. It could have been avoided with a pre-snap read. And you guys know that one of the most important things when it comes to – actually, these are the four things that I think determine whether a quarterback can be elite or not. And as I'm doing it on the fly, I hope I can remember them. First of all, extremely accurate. The most important thing a quarterback can have as far as a trait is accuracy, period. Next, in my opinion, is pre-snap read, post-snap read, and quick release. If a quarterback has those four things, Jacob, they can excel in the National Football League. But we get so caught up in these quarterbacks like Jamar Russell that can throw a ball 80 yards down the field. Or Jamarcus Russell. I can't remember his name. Right. Yeah. Like, you know what I'm saying? You get so caught up does he really have the arm strength? Are you serious? This guy is on tape his entire career throwing 60-yard passes, and you're questioning whether he has arm strength. Well, can he really get it between the two defenders? Who cares? I don't want him throwing between two defenders. I want him throwing to the open receiver. And it's what Tom Brady does so well. It's what Aaron Rodgers does so well. It's what Josh Allen is starting to do so well, are pre and post-snap reads. It's absolutely huge. So, anyway – there it is. There's your Chalk Talk segment. Hopefully we didn't bore you too much. Now let's do this. Let's take us a quick commercial break. And when we get back, we're going to recap kind of what happened with the five players that I picked going into that game that I really wanted to focus on. And we're going to tell you exactly how good they did. And then we'll come back and talk a little bit of PFF. And we also got a listener email for you too. So let's take us a quick commercial break.
We all have smartphones, and we all know they're pretty amazing, but they also can be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. So U.S. Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for five. That's right, a company that sells phones wants us to put down our phones. And to see what we find, learn more at uscellular.com/builtforus.
All right, so let's do this, Jacob. Let's talk about the five players that I picked last week that I said, hey, look, these are the guys that I want to watch in this 49ers preseason game, okay? These are the guys that I really want to kind of see how they come out and perform. I think they could play a big role for the Packers. They've maybe shown flashes in camp. And let's list them out here. Number one on my list was Romeo Dobbs. His PFF grade ended up being a 66.0. To me, that checks out. That's right in that ballpark. We've talked about in the past, Ryan's done it very, very well, that if a wide receiver can perform a rookie can perform in the 60s in PFF, it kind of shows you, okay, they can project later in their career to be a good football player. Romeo Dobbs finished with a 66. How did you think Romeo Dobbs played? I mean, obviously he got targeted. Was it seven times? Only had three catches, but
seven times, three receptions. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he did all right. And I think that there's a lot of things to be excited about, but I want to probably tamp down some expectations like Ryan usually does. You know, I don't like the drops, and apparently he's been known for that over his career. But like you said, the small, you don't teach the fact that he did that hard fake inside when he could have just released straight off, you know, the snap, the little things like that. And he seems humble. You watch him in his interviews. He seems like a guy that's not overly cocky, that he's willing to learn, that he knows he has to learn. I'm excited. Like you said, he's a rookie, man, and he's showing very, very promising traits already. And I just like that game speed. I don't think you can, that's something that you can't really scout for unless you play against the guy, kind of thing. Right. And he just looks so impressive in that aspect. Like you said, we've seen it against Stokes. Now we've seen it against DBs and live speed. So I'm just excited to see him take those steps. And in the next couple preseason games, he can maybe hopefully shake off those bugs, shake off those small drops. You know, Rodgers is going to be giving him that death stare if he does that in the games, where it's sends chills up and down your spine. So I'm excited, and I think there's only good things coming from Dobbs.
I completely agree. I think he's on the right track. Again, some people talk about him like he's a superstar. I don't see that.
I think pump the brakes there a little bit.
He's a great prospect. And keep in mind, too, that it that play that we just dissected on Chalk Talk, if that had been week one, the receivers on the field most likely would have been from left to right, Lazard, then Cobb in Amari's spot, and then on the opposite side would have been Sammy Watkins. So Dobbs's spot in that gun empty 11 strong left would have actually been played by Sammy Watkins, if I understand the depth chart correctly, because, you know, I do think that Alan Lazard is our X receiver, and I kind of feel like, he would have been in that spot. So Dobbs wouldn't even had that opportunity in week one. Now, here's what's cool. If we come out in week one, guys, and we run 11 personnel and Dobbs is on the field, we've got something special, because that means the coaching staff is going, holy cow, he just blew past these vets, right? So I don't necessarily look at Dobbs as a slot receiver. I'm not saying he couldn't play it, but in that scenario there, he would definitely have. I think that would have been Sammy Watkins on that side of the ball. But we'll see, man. It's going to be fun. All right, up next, the number two player that I was really wanting to key in on was Quay Walker. Really, really excited about Quay Walker. We talked about him having a great camp. He's really impressed. We've seen him at Family Night doing some special things, albeit a scrimmage, not even a scrimmage, a practice at Family Night. Quay Walker came out, and his PFF grade was 56.9. Pretty bad, okay? Now, let's draw a parallel. Josh Myers last year, our rookie center, performed in the 50s most of the year, right? So it's not horrible. It's not a cut-em grade. It's not in the 30s like you see some of these guys, like a Roquan Smith on certain aspects of their game. But here's the caveat, though. There were only 12 snaps that he played, okay?
Yeah.
So he played some special team snaps, too. But from my information I gathered, very, very limited row with Quay Walker. Did you see anything there, or were you like me, just kind of was non-existent in that game there?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's fair to judge him. One thing I did notice, and I think I sent you a message as we're watching her, he looks like a beast out there, a man bear just standing there. You know, and I thought that he looked very quick laterally, you know, sideline to sideline for being that big. The guy can move, man, and he just looks scary. And I'm excited to see him and Devondre paired together. In this situation, like you said, 12 snaps, I'm not going to be too worried about it, regardless of what his grade is. Even if he was in that, well, I shouldn't say, if he was at Roquan's level, I'd probably be worried, but you know, I think it'll be fine. I'm not overthinking it. I think that the guy's put in the time, the effort. You give him another 12 snaps, I bet you that grade evens out or even improves quite a bit.
Yeah, you're looking for that rookie baseline to be in the 60s as far as PFF grade. So the fact that he was just under it, it's not like overly alarming, but at the same time, I was a little bit like, oh, man, I wish he'd done better. But 12 snaps, and you got to keep in mind, the players he had around
him. He's going against the ones, right, at that point, pretty much?
He's going against the ones, and that 34 front playing in front of him were all of our backup defensive linemen.
Exactly.
So, you know, you got to really, really put that into perspective, too. So number three on my list was Jordan Love. He finished at a 58.0. I believe these PFF grades were finalized. I went back and double-checked them last night, unless something changed this morning. 58.0, that's bad, Jacob. That was a bad game. And when I watched it, he showed arm talent. He showed arm talent. He put placement like that ball to Dobbs. There was another one, too, that Dobbs didn't track the ball very well. That should have been a touchdown catch. He did some things well. You can see the tools. You can see the medium to deep accuracy. Almost, I almost feel like he's got better deep accuracy than Rodgers. I probably get roasted for that. But I've seen Rodgers miss on a lot of deep balls, and it seems like Jordan Love throws a pretty good deep ball. But as far as PFF grades, I guarantee you that play we designed there with Dobbs, Jacob, they probably gave him a bad grade on that because they seen the same thing I did. Now, granted, it was a good throw. Right, it was good placement and all that, but the proper read was the Guara underneath, especially with the down and distance being fourth and three. So, 58, a little underwhelming for me. I want to see him at least performing in the 60s, especially in the preseason. But at the same time, what we said with Quay Walker, you're out there playing with a bunch of backups, right?
Yeah.
All right. So, Jordan Love, did anything else stand out to you with him? Was there anything that you felt like okay, he did great, or you know, did bad?
I just hate to see this guy just seems cursed. You know, I said on the post game show, it's the classic one step forward, two steps back. And like the stat line, you know, I feel like the fans that don't really dive into it like a lot of us do, they just read that stat line and they say, ah, he's trash. You know, he's trash. Right. We got to trade him. We got to cut him, whatever. And if you watch the whole game, you realize that that's not what happened. And two of those interceptions are not his fault. And again, I'm not giving him an out. I've been more critical of Jordan Love than a lot of people have, but I still do believe in him. And I think that if you don't, you've got to justify that with something other than, well, he sucks in preseason. You know, I
don't. Right. It's tough this time of year. We're all excited about football. The people who are going to be negative are going to be overly negative, and the people who are going to be positive are going to be overly positive. That's just everything's magnified because we've been starved for football for so long, right? So yeah. It's definitely – it comes into effect. Number four on my list, Kingsley, you ready for this?
Uh-oh.
Enagbare.
There we go. I converted him.
All right, there you go. I'm going to change it up all year just to tick people off. I about said a bad word, man. That was close. All right, so – Kingsley Enagbare, right? 60.6 was the PFF grade. Guys, I checked that off as a success. I mean, you're talking about a rookie fifth-round pick come out and perform in the 60s. That's what you're looking for, just like we said with Romeo Doubs. That's showing, okay, you've got something there. That's you're in the ballpark. Now, his
tackling grade is 73 as well.
Wow, I didn't know that. I've got his pass rush grade is a 68.8. Now, against the run, and we all talked about this, 49.9. He is not a good run defender, not saying he couldn't develop into that. It's kind of the opposite of Rashawn Gary. You know, when Rashawn Gary played at Michigan, they had him playing inside a lot on the defensive line, and he was a great run defender, but he didn't ever tally up any sacks hardly, right? It's kind of the opposite effect with Kingsley because he played a lot of that wide nine in college, and we talked about how the hash marks benefit that, right, with the wider hash marks or whatever, you know. When it comes to Kingsley, he's going to be a great pass rusher, I think, at least a good pass rusher, but we've got to work on that run defense, right? Setting the edge and all that. So, again, checks the box, man. I'm excited about Kingsley. One game down, it's only one. It's a limited amount of reps, but he showed me something there. What did you think of Kingsley?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely encouraging. And like you said, I don't remember the one sack where he just – had that stiff arm kind of basically where he just ripped the guy and pushed him away. And he shows that he's got that power. He's got the speed. I want to see if maybe, man, if Gary could take him under his wing and kind of show him some more hand chops and that kind of stuff, some just the work ethic, the drive. And he's got the size. He's got the speed. He's got the cool name. He's everything, man. He's ready to go. He just needs to put it all together. So I'm about to buy me a Kingsley jersey.
Ooh, I like it, dude. I like it. Number five, this was the darling. This is the absolute darling of the game. Zach Tom graded out as an 80.1, Jacob. Now, listen, Royce Newman set the world on fire last preseason, right?
I got to tell you something real quick, Clayton.
Yeah, let's hear it.
As of like 45 minutes ago, they increased it to an 80.2.
Hey.
Must have found something. Hey, get that extra 0.1 in there.
They said his shoes were tied perfectly, so they gave him.
Anyways, yeah.
Go ahead. What were you going to say? I'm sorry.
No, I just got to get that extra 0.1, man. He earned it. You got to get that in there.
I love PFF, man. I really do. Just the fact that they're constantly trying to get better, and anybody who bashes them, not anybody, it's okay to say, hey, I don't like that approach. That's cool, man. I'm not saying I'm right and they're wrong. But when people don't understand what it is, and they bash it, that's when I'm like, okay, you lost me, dude. Like you're basically saying there's no other way of determining how well the player played other than statistics. And I don't want to know about it if there is. And I'm just going to tell you you're wrong because I want to be argumentative, you know?
So, AKA Bears fans.
Yeah, basically. Yes. Yeah. With Roquan, that was, God, that was hilarious, dude. Literally it was 48 hours past. 48 hours earlier, I was in the conversation with him going, why do you like this guy? Well, he had 160 tackles, and he's this and that. He's a freak, blah, blah, blah. You're stupid. You don't understand football. Go back to PFF. And then 48 hours later, they're going, just get rid of him. We ain't that big of a deal. Like, what happened? Where's all that energy at?
Oh, man.
And I'm not one. I don't like to go on there and argue with other fan bases. I actually like getting along with other fan bases. And I feel like the second you have that superiority, like, okay, I can't learn anything from other people. I really feel like you're robbing yourself of extra knowledge when it comes to the game of football. Mm-hmm. I'm just kind of weird like that, but it is funny watching some of the conversations, man. It's It's hilarious. Now, I want to talk about one player. So those are the five that I've talked about, right? So just to do a quick summary, Romeo Doubs, 66. I checked it off as a success. Linebacker Quay Walker, 56.9. I put a minus sign. Feel like it was a bad game. Limited snaps, but a bad game. Number three, quarterback Jordan Love, a minus sign, 58. Got to play better. They got to see more than that, you know, out of Jordan Love. Check mark for Kingsley and Igbaré. Like I said, a 68.8 rushing grade. And then you said he had a great tackling grade there too. That's a success. And then Zach Tom setting the world on fire with an 80.2. I think we got us an offensive line of the future there, guys. And someone who could potentially play right tackle, left tackle. Like, that's pretty exciting stuff. Now, one player that stood outside of that top five, and Ryan pointed this out on Twitter, Josh Myers. Jacob, have you seen his grade?
Oh, man, it's the best of them.
92.2 PFF grade. And now here, there's kind of a caveat here. I went and looked at it. His pass rushing grade was only a 60, a pass blocking grade was only a 65.2, I believe.
Right.
But his run blocking grade, 93.0. And it's funny because Coach Hahn jumped on the live stream with us, right? And I remember there was one specific play where I think he called out Josh Myers, if I can remember, like, oh my God, he's road grading. Like, that's it just kind of shows you people's strengths are starting to pop now. And the fact that he had a 92.2. And Josh Myers was in the 50s for most of the year last year. Am I right, Jacob? Yep. Do you remember?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So
very underwhelming.
Quay Walker, very first preseason game. We're overreacting, I know. 56.9 doesn't mean anything. I mean, Josh Myers last year finishing in the 50s, and he jumps up to a 92.2. Granted, you know, he probably wasn't going up against the ones, but I'm excited to see Josh Myers moving forward. Are there any other PFF?
That's on 36 total plays too. Like, it wasn't just, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 plays. That was on 36 total plays. So total snaps. Yeah,
absolutely. You know, another one, Jake Hansen, player that, I mean, he's really, really becoming one of my dark horses. What were you going to say about Jake Hansen?
No, it's just, that's one of those guys where we all kind of wrote him off, and we wrote him off almost like 2 years ago, it seems like now. And he's quietly been grinding, been working. And it's one of those picks, man. We have to learn to not count guys out, even if they have maybe like a slow start. You know, we're doing this with Amari. People talk stuff smack about Slayton. Look at what he's doing. People talked a lot of stuff about a lot of picks. And then if you give them time, the Packers don't draft for immediate success. They know that they've got the talent and the coaching staff. We just give them a little bit of time. They're really good at molding these guys. I think we got to give them a little bit more leeway with that before we start judging.
Yeah, completely agree, man. All right, so is there anything else you want to cover, Jacob, as far as PFF goes?
I got a couple of really cool things that I just was looking up. I listened to Ryan's podcast this morning, and he went through the PFF grades like he does, and I want to just copy and paste what he did. So I started looking at some different genres, aspects, ways of looking at it. So real quick, diamonds in the rough is what I call this. Low-key great player grades, different from Ryan's takes, literally. So as of the moment, about like 7:30 this morning, they only had, I believe, 12 to 14 teams graded. But I mean, that's roughly around just under half the league. So at that moment, like I said, around 7:30 this morning, the Packers were ranked number two so far in the team run blocking grade. We had 82.5, second only to Arizona, which, you know, when we watch the game, we're all sitting here as armchair quarterbacks being like, offensive line's not doing good, blah, blah, blah. They actually graded out quite well, even individually. The Packers were the number one ranked tackling team in the NFL of all teams graded according to PFF currently at a 77.7. Oh, we'll get into that in just a second.
Gary.
Yes, sir. The Packers were ranked number two in defensive pass rush grade, which is 75.1, only to Arizona again. We looked, Andy Davis is grading out as the number 11th ranked wide receiver. Snaps were running a receiving route, so 78.8. Then we look over at our draft. We have – where is he? There we go. My boy, Juwan Winfrey, is tied for 14th with the grade for hands drop, basically not dropping balls. Juwan Winfrey is also the league's number 14th ranked wide receiver drop ball. And then Shamar Jean Charles ranks 31st of all NFL defenders in run defensive grade. Isaiah McDuffie's ranking 38th. We've got Carpenter had fourth overall in tackling grade, fourth overall, which I've been very, I would love to see Tariq do a lot more, you know, in camp, but the fact that he's ranked fourth overall in tackling grade is pretty awesome. He had 35 snaps. So, I mean, that's not nothing. Dalen Levitt was ranked ninth. McDuffie comes in at 17th in tackling grades. So that shows you why our team was ranked so high in aspect. The highest ranked pass rush snaps. Get this. TJ Slayton comes in at number six with a 90.3 pass rush grade. And then Jonathan Garvin comes in at 11th with an 82.0. And then even big old Jonathan Ford ranks 27th with a 74.6 pass rushing grade, which I just thought was awesome. His ranked 19th overall is the offensive grade for wide receivers. And Dwan Winfrey ranks 24th. I just, I'm so happy. Jawan Winfrey is finally making me happy. Chris Barnes ranks 20th in coverage. Nixon ranks 35th. Sorry, what were you saying?
No, you're good. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. Was that it? Was that everything?
I got one more. And then overall ranking, receiving grade, BJ ranks 4th in the league right now with a 90.8. And Danny Davis ranks 24th with a 78.8. So just really fun. Cool stuff.
That battle is heating up at running back, isn't it? I mean, Goodson showed some stuff. Baylor showed some stuff. You know, Colin Hill's just over there going, oh my God. I've got to get back on the field. TJ Slayton was a pleasant surprise, right? So, because I was communicating with Ryan on Twitter and I posted that TJ Slayton had a pass rush, success rate of like 34% or something. And I thought he corrected me and told me it was the younger player, but you're kind of, I may have misunderstood him too on Twitter, but you're confirming that TJ Slayton did indeed have a great pass rushing game, right?
Correct. Number six, 90.3.
Oh, love it, dude. Love it. That big guy. If he gets good at rushing the quarterback, oh my God. I mean, when it comes to playing two gap, all he's got to do is just get in people's way with that body mass. So covering the run, you're good. But you get him in the backfield, man. It kind of, I don't know, man, it just opens up so many possibilities. But we're at the 51-minute mark. I want to keep it under an hour. So let's try to get to this email and we'll get out of here, Jacob. This comes from, let's see here. So the email comes from, I'm trying to find the name here. He told me his name in it. Okay, here it is. Hey, Clayton, my name is Emilio. I'm not going to try to say the last name. I don't want to butcher it. Love your show. Emilio. Really glad you joined up with Ryan to add to the network. I think it's been a great addition. I've been meaning to send this email for a while. Just now getting around to it is my fault. He said, first bullet point, I was born September 24th. So I do think that you're onto something about being born in September and having a connection to the Packers. number two, I know you always talk about learning from these business guys in Knoxville. Was it a specific business? If you can't go into detail, no worries. I was just wondering if I could learn anything. I've gotten a lawn and landscaping company off the ground and have a possibility for a partnership. And I was wondering if you had any advice on getting yourself into a partnership or how to handle it moving forward. And then the third bullet point says, you talked about your catering business. My mom's has catered for 30 plus years in New York. If you need any help, give me a holler. Dude, I love that holler. See, they're speaking my language here, Jake. That's what I'm talking about. H-O-L-L-E-R. I love it. He says, I'm originally from upstate New York. Last year, my girlfriend and I moved to Maryville, Tennessee. Love it down here, and the people are crazy nice. We should definitely link up sometime. I completely agree, Emilio. We need to get together. Now, here's his football stuff. I do really need some help on the possibility of me and my girlfriend going to our first game at Lambeau Field. Called into Ryan's After Dark. Didn't have too much info for me. I know you and your now wife went on a whim. Is there anything you would suggest to do? What would be a good place to get seats? And what is something you have to do for the first time you ever go? Love what you're doing. Keep it up, man. Great content. Great work. Love the hustle. Awesome. Emilio, thank you. I'm going to answer the business stuff offline. I don't want to bore our users with that, but I actually own a landscaping business as well. And I can give you some, they're so simple little tips on getting that thing started that, I'll send you an email with some tips there. But as far as going to Lambeau the first time, Jake, I thought this would be a cool one to wrap up the show with and kind of answer for him. Obviously you've got family that live in Green Bay. What I did here, Emilio, is I made a list. The first time I went to Lambeau, it was on a budget, okay? So I'm going to explain to you what we did the first time we went that saved us money. So if you're on a budget, you know, and you got kind of a tight budget, this is probably the best way to go, okay? First of all, get you a hotel in Appleton. Appleton's just outside of Green Bay. It's like, if I remember correctly, it was like 30 minutes away, something like that.
Yep, that's where I was born.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, so get your hotel in Appleton. It's cheaper. There'll be rooms available. You want to book them as soon as possible, but it's a 30-minute ride-up. That's nothing when you're talking about going to Lambeau Field. You can get your tickets at Event USA. There's probably a cheaper way of getting tickets, but I like going through Event USA because it's very, very secure. They've never let me down. That's something I've always used. It used to be called, it wasn't Event USA, but it was called Packer Fan Tours, but they've changed it to Event USA now. All right. Also, something that's cheap that you're going to want to do the first time, tour Lambeau Field. Okay. Jacob, I think I enjoy the Lambeau Field tour more than I enjoy watching a football game at Lambeau. I really do. It is so awesome walking down on the field. If it's in the off season, you get to go into the locker room. There's so many cool things.
Walking out of that tunnel is the most amazing thing I've ever done in my life. I did it with my family, my late grandmother before, and even she was like, it's just awe-inspiring. It almost brings you to tears. It's crazy.
Yeah, Emilio, they took the concrete out of the old tunnel right before they created the new players tunnel, out of the old north tunnel. They busted up the concrete and put it in the new tunnel so that the players will walk across the same exact concrete that Vince Lombardi's Packers walked across. It's unbelievable. You get to walk across it, that same concrete. You want to tour the Packers Hall of Fame, very, very affordable, something you definitely want to do. They got the coolest exhibits in there. As far as eating, there's a restaurant in the upper level of Lambeau. It's called 1919 Kitchen and Tap. It used to be Curly's Pub, but it's 1919 Kitchen and Tap now. Excellent, excellent beer cheese soup. Make sure you get that. And obviously their cheese curds are phenomenal. They've got so many beers on tap. I don't know if you drink or not, but I'm a 2-3 beer kind of guy and I'm ready to go to sleep, but I love trying some of that Wisconsin beer there that's local they got on tap. And here's the other tip. Don't go broke at the pro shop. Okay. If you're on a budget, do not go in there and go crazy and go broke. All right. Now, if you've got an expanded budget, and I'm fortunate enough now that I've gotten to the point that this is how I go to Green Bay now. All right. I go through Packer Fan Tours and I get the package. And what they do is they book your hotel at the Lodge Kohler. You can get that. You got to go early. You got to get it in early because it fills up really, really quick. But I stay at the Lodge Kohler. It's literally right across the street from Lambeau Field. You walk out of the hotel and you're in Lambeau's parking lot, basically. It's really, really cool. It's a top-notch hotel. So I go through Event USA. I get the tickets that comes with the hotel and also get the VIP tailgate pass through Event USA. And that's where you actually get to 3 hours before the game down at D2 Sports Bar right down the street from Lambeau, indoors, climate controlled. You got big screens everywhere, all you can eat, all you can drink. Awesome 3-hour tailgate party. So if you're on a budget, stay in Appleton. Get just single tickets. Don't worry about the packages. And then when you get up there, you can get a tour of Lambeau Field. Maybe order. You could call them ahead of time and order that or get it on Packers.com. I'm not exactly sure how you order it online. We always get ours through Event USA. If you got a little bit bigger budget, man, it is worth it to get the package and stay at the Lodge Kohler. So now you've got family right in Green Bay, right, Jacob?
Yep, multiple family members. Got a couple of family members right outside of Green Bay. The one thing I'll suggest is that just give yourself an extra hour to 2 hours and just walk through the parking lot. Just talk to people. Tell them where you're from. Grab a beer. You know what I mean? They are the most welcoming, even if you're from a different fan base. There'll be couches out there. Guys will have big screen TVs hooked up to their trucks. There'll be big tailgating parties every single play. Just stop and talk to people and just work your way through the crowd and you'll make friends that you will literally have lifelong relationships with. It's insane.
We'll be doing it this year, Jacob, because we're going up to that Rams game. My favorite thing to do is on the way to D2 to the tailgate party is walk through the Packers tailgate. And it is unbelievable. Like that passing through, I've got some awesome videos. I need to send them to you so you can post them on Instagram. Dude, that part right there, probably my favorite. And walking through the neighborhoods, you know, just one or two streets over. Yeah, it's just so jealous, man. So jealous. We're going to get us a house up there. It's just a matter of time.
Studio, Clayton.
It's exactly right. We're going to convert it into a studio and be right there on site. When you're coming back from the VIP tailgate party too, everybody's in the parking lot. And I like to try to get in the stadium. I go to the tailgate party the second the doors open, eat my food and everything. And then about an hour and a half before kickoff, I go on over to the stadium because I want to get inside Lambeau Field as quick as possible. So, hopefully that answered your question there. Again, if you don't get an email from me in a couple of days, Emilio, about the business question, email me back and remind me, and we'll start a conversation. I might even get your cell, and we'll text back and forth. But yeah, that's the way I would handle it. If you're on a budget, you got that little package. If you're not on a budget, you have a little bit more money you can spend. That's the other thing too. Go up early if money isn't an issue. This is my vacation. A lot of people are going to Cancun and they're going, to these exotic beaches. I'm like, heck no, dude. I'm going up there to the frigid cold and I'm going to watch
Wisconsin in the winter.
We fly in 3 days before the game and we spend a whole week. We spend 7 days there and all the traffic and everything's already gone. And when we leave 2 days after the game's over, there's nothing going on. Easy traffic all the way to the, when you're taking the Uber to the airport, it's just a lot more relaxing in that regard. And the Lodge Kohler has a spa that, man, my wife absolutely loves. We got one of those water massage things, dude. It's sick.
Like your wife loves it. Come on, admit it, Clayton. I can see you with the cucumbers on your eyes, getting the massage.
Listen, I'm gonna say this. I got blew up on social media, on my personal social media last year, because people seen me in that robe. They had me in a robe and they're walking around that spa. And I'm telling you, down here, I'm kind of known as I'm definitely blue collar and I'm a very, very tough love kind of person. Like I would do anything in the world for you. But if I think you're being weak and trying to get me to help you do something because you're being weak, dude, I'll be the first one to smack you. I'll cuff you in the back of the head. Like, dude, toughen up. Like, so when they see me in the robe, they were like, wait, what is this? So, yeah. But hey, listen, happy.
I'm going to find that picture. I dedicate that. I will tweet it out to you guys. If you're listening, I'm going to find that, Clayton. I'll send JJ on it.
All it's going to take is one DM to my wife, Mandy, and she would gladly share it with everyone. I guarantee it. So anyway, all right, guys, that's the show. We went a little bit over, but again, we wanted to answer that email for Emilio. And I'm sure there's other people. I don't know, man. Before I started going to Green Bay on a regular basis, Jacob, I loved hearing stuff like this. I love just hearing what the atmosphere is like. And there's nothing better than Green Bay, Wisconsin, for sure. So, Jacob, dude, thank you so much for your time, man. I really, really appreciate it today.
Yes, sir. Go Pack, go.
Yeah. All right, guys. Let's get out of here. As always, let's make sure we go out and be the change that we want to see in the world. And as always, go Pack, go.